dark to light. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. John chapter 1 verse 5. Chapter 21. The self-appointed town council decided there'd never be a better time to hold a public meeting. Having the power back up boosted morale and mood, but it wouldn't take long before that minor miracle faded into the expected. They agreed to strike while the spirit of gratitude and appreciation rode high. Spreading the word posed no problem, nor did finding volunteers to set up row after row of chairs at the Legion's Hall, as the school cafeteria wouldn't hold the expanded population if, as expected, most showed. They set up long tables on the platform while Chuck got the sound system up and running. Arliss stood in the empty hall, imagined it full, imagined countless scenarios, ranging from pretty good to ugly chaos. Do you think we're ready, Lloyd?
As we'll ever be, I guess.
He looked down at the binder in his hands.
It's a good agenda, a sensible one. Doesn't mean it's going to fly. Starting with asking everybody to stow their guns in the vestibule out there. Some won't.
And I'm worried the some who won't are the ones most likely to cause trouble. But we have to start somewhere. She turned as Lana came in carrying a huge basket, then sniffed the air. My God, what is that amazing smell?
Bread. Fresh baked.
She set the basket on the platform, one full of small rounds and loaves.
We've got a variety. I've got a lot of different starters going. We had packaged yeast, but that won't last forever, so I'm making more right now. And I'm going to try my hand at making dry yeast.
You can make yeast? Arliss all but buried her head in the basket.
Yeah, it grows on fruits, potatoes, even tomatoes. I'm going to experiment. Somebody else has to figure out how to mill flour.
If I don't have a chunk of that,
Lloyd breathed in hard through his nose,
I might just die right here and now.
Help yourself. The idea was having some for every household. They're small, I know, but...
Praise Jesus,
Lloyd said with his mouth full. Community action at work. Arliss broke a chunk of her own from Lloyd's round. We're going to have rules, we're going to have structure, but... She bit in.
We're also going to have bread that brings a tear to your eye. It's still warm.
Bread symbolizes hospitality. We break bread together.
Lana smiled at the basket.
I liked using the community kitchen for the first time with this symbol.
Will you marry me?
Lloyd broke off another little chunk. Hey, Arliss jabbed him with her elbow. Get in line. Laughing, Lana wiggled her hand with the ring Max had slipped onto it one quiet spring night.
Already taken, but I'll bake bread for you. Next up, Fred and I are going to get serious about making cheese.
If you can do that, we're going to crown you the queens of New Hope.
Laughing at Arliss, Lana fluffed at her hair.
I'd look good in a crown. I'll be back with more.
Arliss sat beside the basket.
We're going to do this, Lloyd.
He sat on the other side, broke what remained of the round, offered half.
Damn right.
By 8, the hall buzzed with voices. Some had muttered about leaving their weapons, and some had just ignored the edict. But most left them outside the hall. The holiday feeling still rang out, confirming the sense of timing the meeting. Arliss watched Kurt Rove, gun still on his hip, stride in. He gave the crowd a hard look before making his way to where the Mercer brothers had saved a seat for him. If trouble came, she knew it would center there. Arliss took her seat at the long table, flipped open her notebook. She expected to have a lot to record. Fred leaned over to her.
Some are already angry.
Yeah, I got that.
Jonah stepped up to the podium. His opening, reverberated in the room, surprising everyone into silence, then laughter.
We have a sound system, thanks to Chuck.
He waited out the applause.
And we've got that because we have power back, thanks to Manning, Wanda, Chuck again, and Max.
Applause thundered. Cheers and whistles rang. Arliss noted Rove just folded his arms over his chest.
We're going to ask everybody to conserve that power. Those of you who don't have a washing machine in your place, Manning's bypassed the coin op at the laundromat. We put a sign-up sheet in there for rotation. We've got detergent in inventory, for now, and Marcy Wiggs is heading up the committee making soaps. Marcy, why don't you stand up? Let us know how that's coming.
Smart, Arliss thought as the woman stood, began to speak. Touch on other basics, on cooperation. He called out other volunteers. Candle-making, clothes, firewood, animal husbandry, the gardens, the greenhouse project, community maintenance.
Some of you might not know Lana. Can you stand up, Lana? She's been organizing the kitchen here at the Legion into a community kitchen to provide basics for those of us who can't boil water.
That brought out some laughter, more applause.
She's starting that providing tonight. Lana?
I've had a lot of help getting this started. She rattled off the names of the cleanup and organizing crew. We've got some new equipment, thanks to Poe and Kim, Jonah and Aaron, and we're going to put it to use. Dave and Miriam and I decided to christen the kitchen with the most basic and the most satisfying, bread. She picked up her basket. A symbol of life, of hospitality, of communion. We have enough for each household to take a loaf. She tipped the basket so the crowd could see the contents, smiled at the cheerful response. We'll have baskets in the vestibule. Take your share when you leave. Meanwhile, we have...
I'm not taking anything of hers.
Arms still crossed, Rove stared at Lana, actually curled his lip.
How do we know what she put in it? Who says she can take over the kitchen here? Next thing we know, she'll have a cauldron going.
I'm fresh out of Eye of Newt. Lana said coolly. But I do have some starters and some recipes printed out for anyone who wants them.
I'll take Kurt's share,
somebody called out. Lana waited for the roll of laughter to subside. We'll also start on constructing a smokehouse behind the kitchen. If anyone has experience smoking meats, I'd really like to talk to you. Dave and I will be making venison sausage and bologna over the next few days. Arliss will announce it in the bulletin when it's ready. We hope to have the kitchen open 6 days a week, and we're always available for lessons for those, like Jonah, who want to learn how to boil water. When she sat, Max rubbed her leg under the table.
Thanks, Lana. The woman can cook, Jonah added. I had some of her newtless pasta last night. Rachel, can you give us an update on the clinic?
She rose. Appreciation again to Jonah, Aaron, Kim, and Poe. We now have a fully stocked ambulance and some solid equipment. And due to the work of the power team, the clinic will be able to run that equipment. Our over-the-counter and prescription medication stores are well stocked again. We also have a good start on the holistics, thanks to Fred, Tara, Kim, and Lana. Briefly, she glanced at her notes. Jonah and I will continue to give instructions in CPR the first Wednesday evening of each month at 7, and first aid courses every Monday evening at 7 for anyone who signs up. As always, the clinic is open daily at 8, and either Jonah or I will be available for medical emergencies 24/7. We now have Ray, a nurse, and Carly, a nursing student, and Justine, a healer, added to the clinic staff. We'll work together to keep New Hope healthy.
Healer my ass, Lou Mercer shouted. What'd she do, lay hands on you and fix your broken arm?
He snorted out a laugh, had some join him. You're free to request the medical of your choice, Rachel told him, her tone as cold as February.
Just like you're free to sit there and be a dick. We'll still treat your hemorrhoids.
Look, bitch, doctor bitch,
she snapped back. And as the only doctor in the community, I'm going to tell everyone here, the traditional medication we have will eventually deplete. It will expire. Without a chemist, a pharmacist, a lab, without the means, we'll have to depend on other types of medicine and healing, and those who have the ability and the skill to provide it. We need to live in the world we have.
I've got diabetes,
one of Rachel's new patients rose.
And I'm not the only one with a medical issue that needs daily medication. I'm damn grateful a group of my neighbors went out and found more of what we need. And I'm damn grateful to know when there isn't more, there's somebody who'll try to keep me alive and well. That's all I have to say.
I think that says it all. Rachel stepped back, sat down. Jonah stepped back, gave the room a moment to mutter.
Anybody who doesn't want to hear what needs to be said tonight doesn't have to stay. Just as anybody who doesn't like what needs to be done to build this community and keep it safe doesn't have to stay in New Hope. We survived to get here. Surviving isn't enough anymore. So I'm going to turn this meeting over to Lloyd.
Lloyd crossed to the podium, opened his binder before taking cheaters out of his shirt pocket, adjusted them on his nose. He peered out over them at the audience.
I came into New Hope on April 1st. April Fool's Day was a bitch of a day. Cold rain, some sleet, a lot of wind. I came in alone after the group I'd been traveling with for a few weeks got hit by raiders. We got separated, and I guess I got lucky because when we were running in all directions with no plan, I fell into a gully, knocked my head some, banged up my leg. So I lived. I don't know about the others, because when I came to and managed to crawl out, I was alone. A lot of us have been alone since the early days of January. We're not alone anymore.
Some applauded.
I got lucky, he continued. I limped away, and on that first day of April, I limped into New Hope. It was Bill Anderson on sentry duty that day, and he took me straight to the clinic, where Rachel treated my leg, gave me a bottle of water. Young Fred over there brought me an orange and a Milky Way bar, and I'm not ashamed to say I cried like a baby. It was Arliss who brought me a change of clothes, and she and Katie saw to it there were blankets and some food and water in the house Chuck took me to, the house where I live today. I was hurt, and they tended to me. I was hungry, and they gave me food. I wasn't naked, but by God, I was ripe and ragged, and they clothed me. They gave me shelter. They gave me what every one of us has here today. Community.
He paused, adjusted his glasses.
Everyone here has a story not so different from that. I want you to think back to it. I want you not to forget you're lucky, because Jonah's right. Surviving isn't enough. When I limped into New Hope, there were 31 people living here. Now we're more than 300. The group I'd been with ran, without a thought, and I was one of them when we were attacked. We had no leader, no sense beyond our own survival. We had no plan and no structure. New Hope already has more than that, and we're going to build on it. We've already talked about some of the ways we have built on it, and plans for how we'll go forward. Now we're going to talk about how we keep our community safe from raiders and those who threaten the peace from outside, as well as from those who break that peace from the inside.
He took off the cheaters, absently polishing them on his shirt sleeve.
We've had some incidents, and we could call them minor in the big scheme. Fistfights, threats of violence, and physical intimidation. Our own Briar was threatened, intimidated, and harassed by two men when she took a walk along Main Street. Little Dennis Reeder had the bike Bill fixed up for him stolen off the porch of the house where he's living. Ugly words were painted on the door of the house where Jess and Flynn and Dennis and some other children live. Our oldest resident, who we affectionately call Ma Z and lives in the apartment across from mine, came home after working in her gardens, 86, and she puts her time in, to find her place ransacked.
He paused again, laid both his hands on the sides of the podium.
So I'm going to ask you right now, are we a community who's going to sit and do nothing while a young woman can't take a walk in peace, while an old one's home is wrecked, or a little boy has his bike taken off his front porch?
The shouts of no and the hard or surreptitious glances at the Mercers gave Lloyd just what he wanted.
I'm glad to hear that.
He held up a hand to quell the noise.
I'm glad to hear that. I agree. The founders of this community agree. The people who took you in, tended your wounds, gave you food and shelter agree. We survived, and we work every day to secure our homes against any who'd come here to do us harm. Now it's time to implement laws to keep us all safe from any in our community who seek to cause harm.
Rove surged to his feet.
Laws? Getting here first doesn't give anybody the right to tell the rest of us what to do, how to live. We've got bigger things to worry about than some kid's bike, for Christ's sake. Look who's sitting up there, lording it over the rest of us. Half of them aren't like us. You've got a pot to piss in because of the people up here. You want to piss somewhere else, no one's stopping you.
Lloyd's voice didn't rise, his tone didn't sharpen, and his words carried weight.
Like anybody else who's chosen to move on, you'll be given supplies and wishes for a safe journey. That's the way it's going to be? That's the way it's going to be.
But who decides? A woman in the front raised her hand. Who writes the laws, and what happens when they're broken?
That's a good question, Tara. We're starting off with what I believe every reasonable person in this room will support. Laws against violence, against theft and vandalism. I've written up the laws we agree are most essential. We're going to pass out copies of all that rather than have me stand here and go over every one. I'm just going to example killing.
He took a sharp breath in through his nose.
Now, we'd agree the taking of a life can't be tolerated. But what if the taking of that life was in self-defense, in defense of another? That has to be determined. The first line of that determination is law enforcement. We have Carla, who served 6 years as a sheriff's deputy, Mike Roser, who served 10 years in law enforcement, and Max Fallon, who led nearly 100 people safely to New Hope, willing and able to serve the community in this capacity.
This time, Don Mercer leaped to his feet.
I'm not taking orders from some bullshit girl deputy who probably sat on her fat ass eating donuts, or some asshole cop nobody around here even knows. And I'm sure as hell not taking nothing from his kind.
He pointed at Max.
His kind's what caused all this anyway, and most of us know it. What's to stop that fucking weirdo from striking down any one of us if he gets the itch? It was one of his kind killed your man, wasn't it, Lucy?
A thin woman with short graying hair nodded. It was his kind killed Johnny. Swooped in on us like a demon from hell. I barely escaped with my life.
Probably his kind that wrecked the old lady's place. Probably disappeared that kid's bike, too. Laws, my ass. Just another way for them to screw with actual human beings.
Max got slowly to his feet, barely spared Rove a glance when Rove rose with a hand on his gun.
It was human beings who killed three of our group, who ambushed us and killed three human beings before we could stop them. If you want to separate us into sides, both sides have dark in them. I know. It was one like me, and not, who caused the death of a young man who'd given us shelter, who turned against everything we who embrace magic believe. He and the woman who turned him took a life, would have taken the life of my wife and child, my friends. He was my brother, my flesh, my blood, my family. And to stop him from killing, from using what was a gift to destroy, I took his life.
His gaze shifted, latched cold and gray onto Rove.
Believe me, if you draw that gun and threaten anyone here with it, I will stop you. If one who has the gift seeks to harm, I'll stop them. You insulted my wife, who used her talents to give the simple gift of bread. But that's not a crime. It's just ignorance. Draw the gun if you're determined to learn the difference.
This is bullshit.
Lou Mercer jumped to his feet.
Where does he get off threatening to use his mumbo-jumbo to go after one of us? Where does Kurt get off threatening anybody with a gun?
Kurt swung around toward Manning.
My gun's holstered.
Be smart and keep it there and sit the hell down. It's all bullshit.
Lou waved his arms.
Bullshit laws they get to make up? A half-assed police force coming down on us, and all started because some of those up there got here before the rest of us? It's bullshit. I say we vote on it. We're still in fucking America, and we get to vote. We don't just get told.
You might want to peruse the laws before...
Just shut the hell up!
Lou shouted at Lloyd.
You've got no more right than me. I say we vote on this bullshit. We vote if we're going to let a bunch of assholes tell us how we've got to live.
All right, Lou, we can call for a vote. We'll do a show of hands,
Lloyd suggested.
All those who want no structure of law in New Hope, no designated authority to enforce said laws, and no system of justice to enact consequences for the breaking of said laws, raise your hand.
He scanned the room. He'd already had a pretty good idea where he'd see hands raised, and was pleased to note he remained a good judge of character.
I count 14 against. Arliss?
14 against, she confirmed.
That's bullshit, Lou began. You called for a vote. We're voting. All those in favor of a structure of law in New Hope, a designated authority to enforce said laws, and a system of justice to enact consequences for the breaking of said laws, raise your hand.
He nodded.
As it's clearly more than 204, which is the majority, the vote carries for the structure of laws. Eddie, Fred, would you mind passing out the list so people can read what's being proposed?
As they went to hand a stack for each row to pass down, Rove shoved his way forward, snatched a paper from Eddie's hands, crumpled it, tossed it down.
Dude, don't be such a dick.
Eyes fired up, Rove jerked his arm back, fist balled. He punched it at Eddie's face, where it rammed 2 inches away. The fire died to shock, frustration, then disgust.
I knew you were one of them.
He's not. Lana got to her feet. Not in the way you mean. I blocked your punch, Mr. Rove, she continued as she walked down. Because I'm not going to let you bully and physically assault a friend.
Aw, Lana, I can handle myself.
She patted Eddie's shoulder. I know it. Go ahead and pass out the stacks. As Eddie moved on, Lana stepped into his place. She tapped a finger in the air in front of Rove's fist. He rolled his shoulder, dropped his arm. Would you like to take a swing at me, Mr. Rove? Without looking around, she held up a hand as Max pushed to his feet. Or are you going to leave it with insults and bigotry? She knew hate when he stood in front of her, and could read through that hate, the humiliation that stained it, just how much he wished to hurt her, and just how much he feared her. Several more people rose as he stood, his fist still balled at his side and trembling there. Some moved to stand beside her, behind her. Go home, Kurt, Manning advised, and gently drew Lana back. Go home and cool off. Rove turned on his heel, strode toward the back. Of the 14 who'd raised a hand with him for the nay vote, only 9 walked out with him.
You've got balls, Manning told Lana, if you don't mind me saying so.
I don't mind. Since I haven't had them very long. Chapter 22. For a week, then two, as May blended into June, New Hope built. A greenhouse, a smokehouse, a picnic area behind the gardens. Twice people wandered in, a group of 3, another of 5. With power restored, Chuck combined his brand of magic with Max's to bring the internet online. It was slow and spotty dial-up, supported only a handful of what they designated as priority locations, but it added another layer of hope. Many with missing loved ones lined up daily at the new town library to send emails and check religiously for any response. Even though none came, hope lived. Though Chuck continued his quest, communication with the outside world remained a void. Arliss might not have been able to surf the web, but she had the software to publish the bulletin without hammering at the old Underwood. And Max wrote. Jonah quietly moved into Rachel's bedroom. The gardens flourished, and if they benefited from a little magical help, no one complained. It feels like we found balance. Lana sat on her front porch, in a chair painted a cheerful red, and enjoyed sun tea and a sugar cookie from the batch she'd made with her share of supplies. Arliss sat with her, as she often did at the end of the day. It's like an idol, she continued. And this is from the lifelong city dweller. We've got fresh cherries, grapes, which makes you think yeast. I also think tarts and jams and jellies. We've already gotten some tomatoes, some vegetables, lovely fresh lettuce and greens. Bill hauled 2 cases of mason jars and lids to the kitchen. I'm watching corn grow, which is amazing to this lifelong urbanite. Rachel said the baby is perfect and over a pound now. I swear she feels a lot heavier. Then I imagine swallowing a pound of sugar and see the correlation. On a contented sigh, she stroked her belly. Speaking of yeast, we made and dried some. And thanks to Chuck, I don't have to write recipes out until my hand cramps. Plus, Rove and the Mercers and that pissy Sharon Beamer haven't caused any trouble since the public meeting. Give them time. Oh, no spoiling my happy mood. There's Will. Lana waved a hand, signaling him over. How are things going there?
Going where?
With you and Will. Deliberately, Lana wiggled her eyebrows. I felt some definite vibes.
Your vibes are off. We're just friends, with a shared childhood history.
Arliss took a sip of her wine, watched Will cross the street.
But he is nice to look at.
Ladies?
We're out of beer, Lana told him, but we've got wine.
I wouldn't mind some. We're just back. Hunting party.
Don't tell me I'm going to be making more venison sausage.
It's good stuff.
Oh, well. I'll get you a glass.
Sit, Arliss ordered.
I'll get it.
Pound of sugar, she added as she got up, went inside.
Pound of sugar?
Lana tapped her baby mound. Have a cookie.
Wouldn't mind that either.
He took one, bit in, shut his eyes.
Oh man, that's really good. You could make a living.
Those were the days. Arliss came out with the glass, poured him one. Will leaned back against the fence post. He glanced back as three deer trotted down Main Street.
It's a good thing Fred thought of putting that invisible fence around the gardens, he commented. We don't have to go more than half a mile to bag a deer.
Also good we approved the town ordinance against deploying a firearm within town limits, Arliss added, or we'd end up with more windows being shot out by accident.
You got that. We're thinking of invading Rachel's place tonight for some DVD roulette. Are you in?
Arliss raised her brows. Who are we?
Dad and me, and Chuck, if we can pull him out of the basement, a few others. They've got that big screen and the player. Entry fees, a snack or beverage.
I could be in, Arliss said, smiling at him. He really was nice to look at, she thought, as Lana got up and walked to the other side of the steps. What about you, Lana? An evening of DVD roulette sound appealing?
Something's coming. It all changes. Something's coming. It always was. Something's coming. It ends. It begins.
Will stepped toward her, then rushed to her as she swayed.
Hey, hey, hey.
He shoved his glass at Arliss and steadied Lana.
I'm all right. Just got dizzy.
I'll get Rachel. I'll find Max.
No, I just got dizzy. I'm fine.
I'm getting Rachel, Arliss insisted, and bolted across the street.
Here.
Will carried her to the chair, set her down.
What's this?
Sun tea.
Okay, that's probably good. Drink a little. You really went pale. What's coming?
I don't know.
She laid a hand on the baby.
It was just this feeling of inevitability and sorrow. I practice, but not as much as I should. I don't know how to control or interpret as much as I should.
Rachel, in a t-shirt and cargo shorts, crossed the street at a fast clip.
What's all this?
I just had a moment, Lana said as Rachel took her pulse. It came and went. I feel fine.
Your pulse is rapid.
It scared me. It was one of the feelings I get. They just cover me. I don't know how to explain. They pour out of me and saturate me. It's not physical, not in the usual way.
I'll find Max.
Oh, don't.
As he stepped back, Lana pleaded with Will. Don't worry him. I'm fine.
He'd kick my ass, and I'd have to help him do it if I didn't go get him.
All right. I can't be responsible for you and Max both kicking your ass. Rachel, really, you just examined me and the baby this morning. I know what it was. It's not medical, and it passed.
She took Rachel's hand, then Arliss's.
Something's coming, and soon. That's all I know for certain.
It all changes, Arliss repeated. It ends. It begins.
Did I say that? It's a little like being outside myself, or inside. I'm not a seer.
She looked down at her belly.
But she might be.
I can't see what she sees, I just feel it. She heard the sound of running feet, but saw Chuck, not Max, rushing along the sidewalk.
I got something!
He waved the paper he held, jogging onto the porch.
Contact! Sort of.
Internet contact? Arliss snatched the paper out of his hand before he'd caught his breath. Attention, all God-fearing humans. If you are reading this, you are one of the chosen. No doubt you have lost those dear to you and have felt, may still know, despair. No doubt you have witnessed firsthand the abominations that have desecrated the world our Lord created. You may believe the end times are upon us, but take heart. You are not alone. Have faith. Have courage. We who survived this demonic plague wrought by Satan's children face a great test. Only we can defend our world, our lives, our very souls. Arm yourselves and join the Holy Crusade. Will you stand by while our women are raped, our children mutilated, while the very survival of humanity is threatened by the ungodly, by the uncanny? The future of the human race is in our hands. To save it, we must soak them in the blood of the demon. Gather together, chosen warriors. Hunt, kill, destroy the evil that threatens us. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live, so saith the Lord. This is the time of retribution. This is the time of the slaughter. This is the time of the purity warriors. I am with you. I am of you. I am filled with the light of righteous vengeance. Reverend and Commander Jeremiah White.
Bad copy, Arliss managed. Overwrought and fucking terrifying.
Purity warriors. Lana gripped the porch rail. Flynn said he finally got started to talk a little more. The gang who killed her mother called themselves Purity Warriors and had tattoos, crossed swords with a P and a W under the X.
I know, just like I know this Jeremiah.
Arliss handed the paper back to Chuck. He was already stirring up calls for bloodshed back in January, in the early weeks of the Doom.
He's got a rudimentary sight up, Chuck told them. I stumbled on it while I hunted for communications. There's more. He's uploaded some photos. They're pretty graphic. And he's got one up of the tattoo you're talking about. He calls it the Mark of the Chosen. Batshit, man. Sick and batshit. He claims he's working on putting up a message board. I hacked in, and he's got more than 200 hits. Less than 50 individuals, so people go back, check the site again.
50's not many, Arliss murmured. But
it says we're not the only ones with power and internet. Chuck finished.
We wouldn't be the only ones appalled by the sick and the batshit, Arliss commented. But
some will revel in it.
Eyes grim, Rachel nodded.
Including a handful in New Hope. Could you tell when he is or was posting? Where's the site based?
I think he's mobile. That's more scary because I don't know how he could be. Still, now that I found it, I can monitor it. Everything else I've found so far is pre-Doom. It's stuff that's been up since before it all fell down. But if there's one, the batshit, there's going to be more.
He broke off as Max pulled up to the curb in a truck. Max got out one side, Will the other. I'm fine, Lana said quickly.
Will said you fainted.
She aimed a frustrated look at Will. I got a little dizzy. He cupped her face, studied it.
You had a vision?
No, not... It's hard to explain. I think the baby did, and it somehow filtered through me.
You're connected physically, Rachel pointed out. Your health, the baby's. I don't know anything about this other side of things, really, but it seems to me that connection could go there.
It's not the first time, Max concurred. Could it harm her?
I'd say driving's out.
Appalled, Lana stared. She'd learned to love driving. Come on!
I'm going to side with the doctor, Arliss said. You went off, Lana. You were somewhere else. I'd give a pass on driving, operating heavy equipment, she added, trying to lighten the blow.
You're a terrible driver anyway.
Max kissed her forehead. You'll pay for that later, but we've got more to worry about. Chuck? As Chuck handed the paper to Max, began to explain, Lana sat again, thought again. No risks, she decided. Whatever affected her affected the baby, and apparently vice versa. Rachel poured out more sun tea.
Hydrate. And I want to know if you have any more dizzy spells, if you have any unusual feelings, physical or otherwise. There's no point stressing over what Chuck found. One fanatic and a very big country.
That helps, but as we said, we have a handful right here who might, probably would, take up that call.
Most aren't here.
Max reread the paper.
Mike and I went out to check on Rove, just take a look. He's pulled out, and so have the Mercers, along with Sharon Beamer, Brad Fitz, Denny Wirtz.
That explains why we haven't seen them around in the past few days.
Arliss nodded.
And they haven't picked up any supplies or reported for any details. Well, it doesn't hurt my feelings.
I'm glad they're gone, Lana said. I'll sleep easier knowing they are.
It also explains why we're 2 trucks shy,
Max went on.
20 gallons of gas, food supplies, weapons. That's why we went out to check.
He ran an absent hand down Lana's arm while he scanned the street.
Still, I imagine most would consider that loss a win against having them moving on.
Meanwhile, I'm going back down, see if I can find somebody else who's back online.
Chuck pulled his fingers through his scraggly beard.
Hitting the downer button here, but figuring all the techs and hackers in the world before the doom, and how I'm getting all but zilch on the stuff?
His shoulders lifted and fell.
You gotta do the math, right? You gotta figure more than 50%, a lot more than 50, wiped out in the doom.
Anyway.
He let that trail off, then wandered away.
He's right.
Max stroked his hand, comfort, reassurance, up and down Lana's arm.
We can judge that by what we all saw getting here, and by the fact that the number of people coming in to stay, or even to pass through, has trickled down to nothing in the last 2 weeks or so.
It makes building and maintaining our own even more important, Arliss put in. Law, order, education, water, and food supplies.
Security,
Max added.
A big world, one fanatic, he repeated. But one with followers. Add raiders, dark uncannies. Whatever outside laws and government might still exist doesn't reach here. And whatever outside laws and government might exist, we don't know who or what might be in charge of it. So we have to protect our own.
I agree with all that, Rachel said, hands in her pockets, looking out at the street, at the peace.
We've made a lot of progress in a short amount of time. Even having the framework of a system of rules, of community responsibilities, has given people a foundation. Maybe having those who don't want that foundation, like Rove, leaving adds to it. It is a big world, and we've got the chance to make this part of it safe and solid.
It has to be more than rules and responsibilities. We're alive. Lana laid a hand on her child as she stirred. So many of us have been grieving, even while doing what has to be done. She looked at Will. So many of us lost pieces of ourselves. But we found pieces, too. Found things inside ourselves we didn't know were there. We're alive, she repeated. Maybe it's time to celebrate that. It's nearly the solstice. Max smiled at her.
The longest day. A time for celebrating.
Yes, and some of us will. I think it may be too soon, only a few days away, for a full community celebration. We need more time to plan that. And I think that's just what we need.
4th of July was always my favorite holiday growing up.
Arliss turned, smiled at Will.
I remember. Barbecue, marching bands, hot dogs, and fireworks.
My mom's cherry pie.
I fondly remember your mom's cherry pie.
A New Hope-style Independence Day. We've got like 3 weeks to set it up,
Will pointed out,
and the setting up will get people juiced up, right?
The all-American holiday.
Arliss cocked her head. Food, games, crafts, music, dancing. I like it. I really like it.
We could start the day with a memorial for those we've lost.
Lana reached for Max's hand.
To honor friends and family who aren't with us, and end the day in celebration.
Now I like it even more. I'm going to work on a bulletin, Arliss decided. I'll get it out today.
I've got a couple of ideas on that,
Will told Arliss.
I'll walk down with you. This is a good thing, Lana. It's a good thing.
I'll go give Jonah the heads up. Will's right.
Rachel tapped Lana's arm. This is a good thing. Alone on the porch with Lana, Max sat looking out on the town.
You're happy here. It's just us,
he said before she could answer. It's not the life I ever imagined for us, and there are still times I wake up expecting to be in the loft. There's a lot I miss, just walking home and the noise and the crowds. I remember how we'd just started to talk about taking a couple of weeks and going to Italy or France. I remember, and I miss. But yes, I'm happy here. I'm with you, and in a few months we'll have a daughter. We're alive, Max. You got us out of a nightmare and brought us here. Are you happy here?
It's not the life I imagined either, and there's a lot I miss. But I'm with you. We're having a child. We're both able to do work that satisfies us and have powers we're both still learning to understand. There's a purpose. We're alive and there's a purpose. We'll celebrate that.
The day of the festival dawned soft and pink. Lana spent the beginning of it, as she had the day before, in food prep with her kitchen team. She focused in on her area, leaving the decorations, with Fred leading that charge, to others. She'd made countless patties of venison and wild turkey while listening to musicians practicing and hammers striking nails. In the hall outside the kitchen, Briar and others worked with groups of children to make Chinese lanterns, red, white, and blue, and paper stars that bore the names of loved ones lost. As the blue washed away the pink, Lana stepped outside, moved to see so many gathered while a newly formed choir sang Amazing Grace. She watched Bill and Will Anderson hang their stars on the old oak at the edge of the green, how they stood with Arliss when she hung hers, and so many others who stepped forward with those symbols until they crowded the lower branches. It touched her to see stars step forward to hang her own. The lanterns the fairies would light as dusk circled the park. Garlands of flowers decked lamp posts and newly constructed arbors. Grills formed a line in a designated cooking area. By noon, musicians played in a gazebo volunteers had finished painting only the night before. Those grills smoked. Crafts lined tables, all up for barter. Kids got their faces painted or took pony rides. Others played bocce or horseshoes. The gardens offered a banquet, tomatoes, peppers, summer squash, summer corn. Rachel said the baby was as long as a healthy ear of corn now. The weather, bright and hot, had many sprawled in the shade, drinking cups of the gallons and gallons of sun tea the community kitchen provided. She heard talk of putting together a softball team, one for adults, one for kids, and using the Little League field half a mile outside the town proper. More talk of expanding the farm, moving it to one of the farms a mile out. Good talk, she thought. Hopeful talk. She danced with Max over the green grass in a summer dress that billowed over her belly. Basking in the sunlight, she gossiped with Arliss while Eddie jammed on his harmonica. On the swings, Fred and Katie swayed back and forth with babies on their laps. Was she happy? Max had asked her a few weeks before. On this day, at this moment, she could give him an unqualified yes. She lifted a hand to wave at Kim and Poe and sighed.
We'll do this every year, won't we?
I think that's a definite yes.
And, Arliss added, we'll put something together for the holidays. Christmas, Hanukkah.
Yes, winter solstice.
Lana rubbed circles over her belly.
It'll be her first.
Arliss lifted her face, shook back her hair, a sassy swing with highlights again, thanks to Clarice.
You still haven't come up with a name for the baby?
We're playing around, but nothing's sticking yet. Last summer, I was just moving in with Max. It seemed so huge, so amazing. Now here we are, expecting a child. Max is playing horseshoes. I bet my entire supply of baking powder, he's never played that before in his life.
She let out a laugh when he threw one, had it pause and revolve in midair, backtrack, then drop neatly onto the post.
And he cheats!
The maneuver had Carla, his partner, cheering, and Manning, one of his opponents, erupting in mock outrage. Max lifted his hands in an innocent gesture, then glanced at Lana. grinned, winked. He was also so serious about the craft. He'd lighten up with me, but he would never have played like that before. It's good to see him relax. I'm going to go pick more corn and give the other team a little boost on the way. I'll give you a hand. Lana pushed herself up, wandered toward the horseshoe pitch. More corn, definitely, she thought as she scanned tables, and tomatoes. She'd check on the supply of wild turkey and venison burgers. But first, she guided Manning's flung horseshoe to the post, had it execute a trio of flips before hitting with a clanging ring, gave Max a grin and a wink. Manning let out a laughing hoot, did a little dance, then blew her a kiss. Yes, she thought, it was good, so good, to just play.
Hey.
Will ran up, tugged Arliss's arm.
We need another for Bocce.
I was just going to... Oh, go ahead. I'm an expert corn picker now. I don't know anything about Bocce.
Good. Neither do I.
Will grabbed her hand, glanced at the stars swaying on the branches.
It's a good day.
On impulse, he leaned over, kissed Lana's cheek, then turned Arliss to him, kissed her, slow and easy on the mouth.
A really good day.
Lana smiled all the way into the corn. It smelled green and earthy, and the music, the voices, the ring of metal on metal followed her as she twisted ears of corn from the stalks. She heard children laughing, a magical sound to her ear, carried on the gentle sigh of the summer breeze. Everything felt so peaceful, the blue sweep of sky, the tall green stalks, the brush of them against her skin. She stood a moment, her arms filled with corn, giving thanks for what she had. The baby kicked, a fast flurry of kicks that nearly had her bobbling the ears. She heard one of Katie's babies cry out, long and shrill, over the music and voices. As she turned to start back, something fluttered to the ground in front of her. She glanced down, froze. It was scorched, its edges curled and blackened, but she recognized the photo of her and Max together, the photo she'd packed before they'd left New York, the photo that had been in the house in the mountains when... Overhead, in a sky going thick, going gray, black crows circled. Max! Corn thudded to the ground as she ran, as she shoved through the verdant stalks, as she heard the first cracks of gunfire. Screams echoed as she fought her way clear. People ran, scattered, dived for cover, returned fire. She saw Carla sprawled on the ground, eyes wide and staring, and Manning, oh God, Manning bleeding on the soft dirt of the horseshoe pitch. Her own scream clogged in her throat as Kurt Rove smashed the butt of his rifle into Chuck's face. All around her, men fired guns and arrows indiscriminately as men and women she knew grabbed children to shield them or to rush them to safety. Rainbow, who taught yoga every morning, threw a shimmering shield over a woman with a toddler. Then her body pitched forward from a bullet in the back. Lana saw a man, tall, lean, his golden mane of hair rippling, lift a rifle, aiming it up as Fred rose, wings furiously batting, one of the babies wrapped in her arms. In seconds, only seconds, the world changed. Lana had no weapon but her power, and threw it out, all instinct. The rifle aimed at Fred and the child flew out of the man's hands, and he turned his crazed blue gaze on her.
There,
he pointed. The man beside him, dark and muscular, the purity tattoo bold on his biceps, lifted his hands. He held a gun in each.
Kill the witch,
he shouted. Even as Lana lifted her hands to fight, to protect her child, thunder blasted. The ground shook with it.
Ours!
Rising behind the building, wings scorched, faces scarred, Eric and Allegra loomed. Everything seemed to stop. An illusion as she heard the screams, the gunfire, even the slicing swish of the stalks as some ran to hide there. They'd survived. They lived. And she saw death in their eyes. She gathered all she had to fight. Max sprinted to her, shoved her back.
Run! Where?
Spewing black bolts toward the sky, Eric let out a laugh.
Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide.
Step aside, brother. We don't want you this time.
We want what's inside her.
With a flash of wings, Allegra swooped lower. Max thrust out, pushed Lana back.
Run, save our daughter.
Together, we're stronger. We have more.
Lana gripped Max's hand.
There's no need for this, Eric, for any of it,
Max shouted.
You're aligning yourself with a madman who hunts our kind. He'll turn on you. They'll all turn on you.
Wow, I never thought of that.
He shot Allegra a surprised look.
Maybe we should think about this. Except, yeah, I forgot one thing. You tried to kill me. I was wrong, Max. We do want you. Dead.
Both of them. The three of them.
Pale hair flying, Allegra shouted.
We call the dark. We rule the dark. And with it, cut off the light.
As Lana did with Max, Allegra gripped Eric's hand. Snarling thunder, black lightning. With Max, Lana blocked the blows, shoved them back, and felt the power quick the ground under her feet. Blood bloomed on Max's arm where a bolt slipped through. Across the field, others ran toward them. Flynn and Lupa, Jonah, Aaron. For a moment, her hope leaped. Together, all of them, they'd push back the dark.
They're coming to help. We just have to...
Lana saw the wave of black, felt the first biting edge of it before Max spun her around. His eyes met hers, held hers as he cloaked her, cloaked their child with his body. He took the full force of the hate, of the dark. The shock jolted through him into her as they flew together, fell together into the stalks. Blood ran from the gash where that keen edge caught her arm. Breath gone, head spinning, she crawled free, rolled, tried to drag Max to safety. He lay covered with blood from countless wounds, his skin scored from burns.
No, no, Max!
She knew, even as she dragged his body into her arms, even as she pressed her face to his, she knew he was gone. Gone. Taken. Murdered. The rage, the grief, the roaring fury spewed up in her. Covered in his blood, spilling her own, she released it on a scream that cleaved the air like a blade. It gushed out wild and red against the oily black. She heard her scream answered with howls of pain. Run. He'd told her to run, but she hadn't listened. He'd told her to save their child, but he'd given his life to save them both. Nowhere to run. Nowhere to hide. Choking on sobs, she dragged Max's gun belt free. Tenderly, she drew the ring from his finger, pushed it onto her thumb. She kissed his face, his lips, his hands.
Save the child, whatever the cost.
She heard his voice in her head, in her heart, and, sobbing, pushed through the stalks toward the forest. She began to run. A movement to her right had her whirling, hand thrown up to fight, to defend. Star flowed out of the tree.
You're hurt.
Lana could only shake her head.
You hurt them more.
As Star gestured back, Lana looked toward the park. Whatever had exploded out of her, that mad, red, raging grief, had leveled some of the attackers. She saw no sign of Eric or Allegra other than a thin haze of smoke smearing the sky. It twisted the raw edges of her already shattered heart to see Arliss limping toward Carla's body, Rachel kneeling beside an unconscious and bloodied Chuck. Others she knew, cared for, rushing to help, or racing toward the street, guns in hand.
Katie, the babies?
Jonah got them inside. They killed Rainbow. She was good. They came for you, for her,
Star said, reaching out and for the first time in weeks touching anyone. Touched a hand to Lana's child.
I can't stay. They'll come back. I can't. They killed Max.
I'm sorry. He was good.
Star bowed her head.
They want us dead, all of us, but the savior most.
She's not the savior, Lana said fiercely. She's my daughter.
She's both. I could hear them.
Now Star pressed a hand to her head.
Hear all the hate. It hurts my head, so I ran and hid, like I did with my mother. I didn't fight, but I will next time. I will. They'll help. They'll protect you. Her.
I have to protect her. I can't stay. They'll try again.
They'll come back and try again.
Star nodded.
Then you have to run. You have to hide. I can still hear them in my head. I'll put Max's name on the tree for you.
Blinded by tears, Lana ran. She ran into all the dreams that had haunted her nights. Chapter 23. Lana kept off the main roads for days. She took shelter where she could, scavenging remote houses for clothes and supplies. Along with clothes, she found a chain and threaded it through Max's ring to wear around her neck. She ate what she could find and worried about the baby. Whenever she saw crows circling overhead or heard their call, she changed direction. Once, exhausted, she dropped down at the base of a dead tree, too steeped in fatigue and grief to go on. Staring at the sky through its skeletal branches, she drifted away. She dreamed. Dreamed of a slim young woman with gray eyes and black hair telling her to get up, to move, to keep going. So Lana got up, moved. Kept going. One terrible day blurred into every terrible night. With no sense of time or distance, she slept in an abandoned car on the side of the road and woke in the shimmer of dawn to the sound of engines. Her first instinct was to call for help, but the stronger one ordered her to stay still and quiet. The stronger one had her skin shivering as those engines stopped. Car doors opened, slammed. Men's voices floated through the windows she'd left open in hopes of a breeze.
"We ought to go back to that shithole town, level it. Somebody there knows where the bitch is. The Rev says she ain't there, she ain't there."
She heard footsteps coming closer, tightened her grip on the gun she slept with, then the distinctive sound of a zipper, the sound of water striking asphalt.
"Waste of gas, you ask me. And if those two freaks want her so bad, they should have taken her out when they had the chance. Instead, we lost 6 good men. We're supposed to be killing freaks, not working with them. Don't see nobody asking you. The Rev knows what he's doing. He's got a plan. And I expect we'll be taking those freaks out after we do the woman. Fucking witch. I got a score to settle with her now. Aw, did she mess up your pretty face when she cut loose? Fuck you, Steed."
A quick laugh, the jerk of a zipper.
"What I know is the freaks are hurting more than you, which is why we're driving all over hell and back looking for some knocked-up demon whore. I find her first, I'm putting a knife straight through her and the brat inside her. Witches have to hang or burn. That'll come. We ought to go through these couple of cars here, see if there's anything worth taking. Forget that. We got a gas mart about 20 miles east. Better pickings."
Lana kept her grip tight on the gun as she felt the car rock.
"Piece of shit anyway."
She held her breath as the footsteps moved on, as doors opened and slammed again. She lay still as an engine roared to life, tires squealed. She counted the knocks of her heart one by one, even after the car sped off, as silence fell again.
"I wouldn't have let them touch you,"
she murmured as she crawled out of the back seat on trembling legs.
"East. They're going east, so we'll go west."
But not on foot. However long she'd walked and wandered, she hadn't put enough distance between her child and those who wanted to harm her. She'd risk the road. For now, she'd risk it. She got behind the wheel, laid the gun on the seat beside her. It took a moment to gather herself, to pull up the power she'd set aside since the day it had ripped through her in a red, killing rage. When she held her hand out, the engine didn't roar to life. It sputtered, knocked, caught. With the sun rising behind her, she drove. The sun hung high when the car died. Leaving it where it stopped, she walked again, with mountains rising around her. Time blurred. Walking, driving when she found another car, scavenging for food, for water. Though she asked herself how far would be far enough, she avoided any towns where people might have gathered. How would she know if they held friend or enemy? She closed away her old life, killed rabbit and squirrel, dressed them, roasted the meat over a fire made by power to feed herself and her baby. She, who'd once believed food could be, should be, art, ate to live. Ate to feed what lived inside her.
Her world became trees, rocks, sky, endless roads, the pitiful thrill of finding a house that had fresh clothes, boots that nearly fit. Comfort became feeling the baby move inside her. Joy became finding a peach tree and tasting the sweet, fresh fruit, having the juice run down a throat parched from the summer heat. Safety became hearing no human voice but her own, seeing human shape only in her own shadow. In those weeks since New Hope, she became a nomad, a wanderer, a hermit with no plan except movement, food, shelter. Until. She topped a rise thick with trees, then immediately crouched for cover. A house sat on land that gently rolled, then flattened again. On the flat, an expansive garden spread at summer peak. She dragged at the pack she'd scavenged, pulled out binoculars. Tomatoes, red and ripe, peas, beans, peppers, carrots, rows of lettuce, cabbage, hillocks of squashes, eggplant. The rising field of corn brought back the scent of blood, of death, of Max. She curled up a moment, fighting off waves of sorrow and grief, then made herself lift the glasses again. A couple of horses stood together, fenced off from a black and white cow, another fence line, and black cows, beef cows, along with a calf. She scanned over a pen where five pigs lolled. Chickens. The idea of eggs nearly brought tears to her eyes. The house itself stood square and sturdy, simple white with a wide porch. A small traditional barn stood cheerfully red. She skimmed over a shed, a small squat silo, a pair of windmills, a greenhouse, some ornamental trees and shrubs, what she thought might be a beehive. Beyond it, more fields. Wheat, she thought. Wheat and maybe hay. Obviously not abandoned, she thought. And, as a truck sat outside, someone was probably inside. Eggs, fresh vegetables, fruit trees. She could wait. Waiting, she dozed. The barking woke her, sent her heart leaping into her throat. A pair of dogs raced around the front of the house, bumping together, tumbling over a patch of grass. She lifted the glasses again as a man came out, tanned, strong-looking in faded jeans and a t-shirt. He wore a ball cap over a shaggy mop of brown hair and sunglasses that obscured his eyes. He loaded a couple of bushel baskets full of produce into the truck, walked back into the house. He came out again with two more before whistling to the dogs. They both jumped into the back of the truck. After loading the other baskets, he got into the cab, drove away. She counted to 60, then counted again before rising. She could hear nothing but birds, chittering squirrels. Using a hand to support her pregnant belly, she picked her way down the rocky slope, eyes trained on the house. If he didn't live alone, someone might be inside. Though she wanted to make a run for the garden, she approached the house cautiously, circling it to peer in windows. Another porch ran along the back, and in the bold sun grew herbs. Pulling her knife, she cut basil, rosemary, thyme, oregano, chives, dill, reveled in the scents as she pushed them into a plastic bag from her pack. Someone could be inside, on the second floor, but she'd risk it. She ran as quickly as her skewed center of gravity allowed and plucked a tomato from the vine, bit into it like an apple, swiped the juice from her chin. She picked pea pods, a handful of string beans, a glossy eggplant, tugged up a carrot, a bulb of garlic. She picked lettuce, ate a leaf while she gathered what she could carry in her pack, her pockets. Apples, a little on the green side, went into her pack, along with a cluster of purple grapes from a vine. She ate some where she stood, looking down at two stone markers under the shade of the apple tree. Ethan Swift, Madeline Swift. They died in the plague, Lana noted, in February, 2 days apart. And someone, the farmer, had marked their graves and planted a sunbeam yellow rose bush between them.
Ethan and Madeline, I hope your souls find peace. Thank you for the food.
Eyes closed, she stood in the dappled shade, wished she could curl up under the tree and sleep, wake in a world without fear and constant movement, where Max could put his arms around her and their baby would be born in peace and safety.
That world, she thought, was done. Living in this one meant doing what needed to be done next. She glanced toward the clucking, humming chickens, imagined sautéing chicken in one of the pats of butter she'd hoarded, flavored with fresh garlic and herbs. She figured while the farmer probably wouldn't miss the vegetables, he'd surely miss a chicken. And since she might want to stay in the area for a day or two, she'd come back, relieve him of one of the hens before she moved on. For now, she'd settle for a couple of eggs. She walked through the pecking chickens into the open coop, where she found a single brown egg under a single roosting bird who seemed as wary of her as Lana was of it.
"He gathered the eggs earlier," she murmured. "I'm lucky you held back."
"She usually does."
Lana whirled, the egg clutched like a grenade in one hand, her other thrust out, ready to throw power and defense. He held his hands up, away from the gun on his hip.
"I'm not going to give you grief over an egg, or whatever else you helped yourself to, especially since you're eating for two. I've got water if you need it. Milk, too. A little bacon to go with that egg."
She had to swallow before speaking the first word to another human since she'd left New Hope.
"Why?"
"Why what?"
"Why would you give me anything? I was stealing."
"So was Jean Valjean."
He shrugged.
"He was hungry too. Look, you can take the damn egg and go, or you can come inside, have a hot meal. It's up to you."
She lowered her hand, laid it on her belly, thought of the baby. He'd planted a rose bush for his dead. She would take it as a sign.
"I'd appreciate a hot meal. I can barter for it, and for the fruits and vegetables I took."
He smiled then.
"What you got?"
"I can work for it."
"Well?"
He scratched the back of his neck.
"We can talk about that."
He stepped back, gave her plenty of room. She could still run, Lana thought.
"Lady, if I wanted to hurt you, I'd have already done it."
Now he turned, walked to where she saw the dogs, prancing and wagging, just outside the chicken wire.
"How did you know I was here?"
"I caught the flash of the sun on your field glasses. Or what I figured was field glasses. The dogs and I decided we'd head out, stop up the road, and walk back to see what you were up to. They won't hurt you."
As if to prove it, both dogs, big with thick creamy fur and madly happy eyes, moved in to rub their bodies against her legs.
"That's Harper, that's Lee. Mockingbird was my mother's favorite book."
She saw him glance toward the apple tree, the graves. Feeling foolish holding on to it, she handed him the egg.
"Your parents?"
"Yeah. Yeah,"
he said again, starting toward the house.
"Those boots have some miles on them."
"They did when I found them."
Accepting that, he continued out, walked onto the porch, opened the unlocked front door. When she hesitated, he let out an impatient breath.
"I was raised in this house by the two people I buried out there. They lived here for 35 years, made a good life for themselves and for me. I'm damn well not going to disrespect them by pulling any crap on a pregnant woman under the roof they gave me. In or out?"
"Sorry. I've forgotten people can be decent."
She stepped inside, into a wide, comfortable living room with a big stone fireplace, easy furniture that mixed styles in a cheerful, welcoming way. It boasted considerable dust and dog hair. Stairs made a jog up. A laundry basket full of jumbled sheets and towels sat on the bottom step. He continued down a hallway, paused, when she did, at a room lined with shelves jammed with books and trinkets.
"My mother was a fierce reader. I've been catching up on reading lately myself."
Like a dream, was she dreaming? The room drew her in, the memories of a life she'd once had. And more, as she reached out, took a book from the shelf. The love.
"Max Fallon. She liked his stuff. I haven't tried him yet. Are you a fan?"
She looked up, eyes drenched, clutching the book, her love's picture to her heart.
My husband.
"He was a fan?"
"Max."
She began to rock, to weep.
Max! Max!
Shit.
He pulled off his cap, raked hands through his hair.
Maybe you should sit down. You can keep the book, just... I'm going to, bring the truck back. So...
He gestured, eased out of the room. She did sit, on the edge of a big chair of navy blue leather, and wept herself empty. He hiked up the road for the truck, came back, put a kettle of water on. She'd looked wound tight in the henhouse, he thought, ready, and he suspected able, to hold her own. Eyes, big and summer blue, exhausted but fierce. And the pregnant, really pregnant, had struck him then as adding a fertile warrior angle to her. But there, in his mother's library, all that had fallen away, leaving her frail, vulnerable, broken. He did better with the fierce and able. When he heard her coming, he put a frying pan on the stove.
I'm sorry, she said.
Losing somebody sucks. Pretty much everybody left knows how much.
He went to the refrigerator, took out bacon wrapped in cloth.
Max Fallon was your husband?
Yes.
Did you lose him in the Doom?
No. He got us out of New York. He got us away and kept us safe. They killed him. His brother killed him.
His brother?
His brother turned to the dark. His brother and the twisted witch who turned him. His brother and the men who hate us because we're not like them. They wanted to kill me. Her.
She wrapped her arms around the mound of her belly.
Max saved us. He died for us. They killed him. Eric, his brother, and the Purity Warriors. They killed Max, killed people we were building a life with, tried to kill more. I had to leave because they wanted me and would kill whoever stood in their way. They hunted me. They may still be hunting me. They'll try to kill you if you help me.
He nodded, said,
huh,
then turned back to the stove.
You want the egg scrambled or fried?
She'd worked herself up again, was nearly breathless with it, her hands clutched at her sides.
Who are you?
Swift. Simon Swift. In another life, I was Captain Swift, U.S. Army. In this one, I'm a farmer. Who are you?
Slowly, she took off her pack, set it aside.
Lana Bingham. I was a chef. I am a witch.
I got the second back in the coop when you gave me a little punch.
I didn't mean...
Just a little. Bet you've got more. A chef? Why am I cooking?
She let out a breath, took in another, then crouched by her pack. She took out herbs, a tomato, a pepper, a couple of spring onions.
Would you like an omelet?
Sure.
It's a nice stove. It's a nice kitchen.
Her voice shook again. He could see, as well as hear, her fight to steady it.
How do you get the gas?
Gas well.
A what?
Natural gas well.
He gestured vaguely toward the window.
It's piped into the house. We've got gas line, gas stove, gas every damn thing. Some wind power, too.
She washed her hands in the farm sink, then the herbs and vegetables.
I need a few things. More eggs, a small bowl, a whisk.
I've got it.
After heating the skillet, she put on bacon. She took a chef's knife, serviceable, from a block, pulled over a cutting board, and began chopping while it sizzled. Cooking. Normal. How could anything be normal? And yet, chopping herbs, she felt more herself than she had in weeks.
You were in the army?
Yeah, for about 10 years. I'd had enough, but I got out primarily because my mother got sick. Cancer. They needed help around here while she was fighting it. She fought it, beat it, and then, well, fucking doom.
I'm sorry.
They worked together in silence for a few minutes. He got her the can he used to store bacon grease, the plastic tub he used for kitchen compost, and watched, mildly in awe, as she cooked.
How long have you been on the road?
He asked her.
I don't know. I lost track. It was the 4th of July when I left.
About 6 weeks. Where'd you start?
We were in a place we called New Hope in Virginia, I think south of Fredericksburg. Where am I now?
You came a ways. This is Maryland, Western.
What are the mountains?
The Blue Ridge.
Are there other people?
Some. There's a town, more a settlement now. We do some trading. I was taking produce in. There's a mill. They're making flour. Got some sheep, a loom, a blacksmith, a butcher. You work with what you've got.
She nodded, folded the egg over the vegetables. Is there a doctor?
Not yet. A vet assistant's as close as we've got.
She lifted the omelet onto one of the plates he'd set out, cut it in half, slid half onto the second plate. Are there any uncannies?
A few sprinkled in. Nobody has a problem with it. Do you want that milk?
I hate milk, but yes, it's probably good for the baby. He got out the jug, poured her a short glass. They sat at the kitchen counter, a classy and mottled gray granite. The first bite had her closing her eyes as her system absorbed. He took a heftier bite.
Okay, you were serious about the chef deal. I haven't had anything close to this good in a hell of a while.
Calculating, she ate slowly. If I could stay for a couple of days, I could pay you back with cooking. And we had a garden in New Hope, so I learned how to garden. I could help there. A couple of days should be safe. For both of us.
Then what?
I don't know. I haven't thought about anything but moving, getting away, keeping the baby safe.
When's she due? You said she, right?
Yes. The last week of September.
You figure to deliver her on your own? On the road?
She knew how it sounded, had worried about it constantly, but hadn't seen a choice. I hope to find a place and do what I need to. I won't let anything happen to her. Whatever it takes, nothing's going to hurt her.
There are women in the settlement, houses scattered around.
I can't. I can't risk so many people. The purity warriors, you don't know. A pretty park, a happy celebration, bodies scattered, smoke rising, Max's blood soaking the brown earth.
Yeah, I do. Some of them came through the settlement a few weeks ago. They didn't get a warm reception.
Fear jumped back into her voice. They were here.
From what I hear, there are some of them traveling around, looking for others who think like they do. Like I said, they didn't find that here.
He ate, considered. Between the purity warriors, raiders, and general assholes, the road wasn't close to safe for a woman alone. Add in that that woman was due to give birth in about 8 weeks, and fierce or not, she apparently had a target on her back. He scooped up the last of his eggs, turned to her.
You should think about staying here. You can take over the kitchen, that's for damn sure. You should think about staying at least until after you have the kid. 4 bedrooms upstairs, I'm only using one.
They could find me. Eric...
That's the brother.
He's mad with power. There's something about my baby, something special, important. I don't know. But Eric and Allegra want to kill her.
Well, if she's special and important, it's just more reason to get her here safe. I don't like people who start trouble, start wars. Look to generally fuck things up. However they're built, I don't like it.
You don't even know me. After nudging his empty plate aside, he shrugged.
What the hell difference does that make?
Nothing, nothing he could have said would have reassured her more. I'm so grateful. And I'm so tired. I'm just so tired. Can we take it a day at a time?
Sure. You can pick a bedroom. It'll be clear which one's mine.
He rose, started to clear. I'll do the dishes. Part of the deal.
Next time, they're all yours. No offense, but you look pretty done. So go up, pick a bed, tune out. I need to get the produce into town. You ought to take my parents' room. It's one of those master deals. Got its own bathroom.
Simon, thank you. He carted dishes to the sink.
Can you make meatloaf?
If you have the meat along with what I've already seen, I can make amazing meatloaf.
You put that together for dinner? We're square.
Chapter 24. Lana found the master suite with its four-poster bed at the top of the stairs. A duvet of deep forest green covered it, along with four thick shams in the same color, edged in a quiet and dull gold that matched the walls. His parents had died here, she remembered. He'd put their room to rights again, cleaned what must have been heartbreaking, cleared the room of all signs of illness. Even through a gnawing fatigue, she recognized that his caring to restore the room to how his mother certainly would have wanted it said something about the son. A man who'd given her food and shelter. It made her think of Lloyd, what he'd said at that first full community meeting. Still, she locked the door behind her, adding a charm to block entrance. She didn't consider it overkill to carry a chair over and prop it under the doorknob. She wanted to sleep, just wanted to go away for a while. On clean sheets, with pillows, under a duvet of forest green. Thinking of his mother, she considered the dirt and grime she carried from the trail and stepped into the adjoining bath. She wouldn't disrespect the woman whose home offered sanctuary by besmirching her bed. Here, too, he'd put things to rights, a stack of fluffy towels on clean, if dusty, counters. Setting aside her pack, she opened the glass door of the shower. Shower gel, shampoo, conditioner, even a woman's shower razor. As her own supplies had dwindled, Lana ignored the niceties as she stripped down. She'd use whatever she needed now, apologize later. If she wept a little as hot water beat down on her, as she watched the dirt, that quick washes in streams and creeks hadn't touched, spiral down the floor drain, she told herself she was entitled to a few tears. She indulged. Who knew how long this bounty would last? Wrapped her hair in a towel. Her body in another. Soft, so blissfully soft. Turning, she studied herself in the mirror. Her breasts, her belly, so ripe. She must be at 33 or 34 weeks now. With all her heart, she believed her daughter remained healthy and strong. She felt that light, that life, both depending on her. If that meant she had to depend on the largesse of a stranger, she would. Cautiously, but she would. She eyed the baskets on the open shelves beside the mirror. Body lotion, skin cream, all so wonderfully female. "Madeline Swift," she murmured. "I'm grateful, and hope you don't mind." She slathered herself, all but feeling her thirsty skin gulp in the moisture. As nothing in her pack resembled clean, she borrowed the robe hanging on the back of the bathroom door. Trembling with gratitude, she turned down the duvet, slid into the sheets. She slept, and slept dreamlessly. Awoke with a jerk, her heart pounding as she tried to remember where she was. The farmhouse, the man with the tough face and careless generosity. She got up as quickly as her heavy belly allowed, tidied the bed, rehung the robe, dressed. The sun told her it was afternoon. She'd gotten good at gauging the time. So she'd slept at least 2 hours. If she wanted to stay the night, God, she wanted to stay the night, she had to earn her keep. Curious, she moved quietly along the second floor, found another bathroom, smaller than what he'd allowed her, and obviously what he used. A towel hung over the shower door, a toothbrush stood in a cup on a small vanity. She found a guest room, as she didn't imagine Simon Swift slept under a cover dotted with pretty violets. Another room, a spare bedroom and sitting room combination, she supposed, with a sewing station under the window. Lastly, his room. Unmade bed, a shirt tossed over a chair back, and air that carried the faint hints of earth and grass. She noted the shotgun propped in the corner, respected his choice to keep a weapon close while he slept. She didn't find him downstairs, so she looked out windows until she spotted him working in the garden. Sweat dampened his shirt as he hoed between rows. The dogs slept under the apple tree, by the grave markers, and the horses watched him with their heads over the fence. Her first thought was to go out and offer to help, but she noted the dishes they'd used that morning sat, clean, dry now, beside the sink. She saw no other signs he'd made a meal while she'd showered, slept, explored. so she'd earn her keep by scouting through the kitchen and making him lunch. When he came in, hot and hungry, the dogs bursting in ahead of him, he saw her at the stove. Something smelled damn good, and some of that, he realized, was woman. She'd wrapped her hair up somehow or other, and it shined like butterscotch candy. When she turned, her face struck him. Quiet and wary beauty. The wariness for him, he thought, as the charge of the dogs, their manic tail flapping, didn't appear to bother her. He kept it light.
What's cooking?
Stir-fry, vegetables and rice. I thought you could use lunch more than a hand in the garden.
Good thinking.
He moved to the sink, washed the dirt off his hands and arms.
Where'd you cook? For a living?
New York.
Big city.
It was.
She plated the food, added one of the cloth napkins she'd found in a drawer, handed him both.
I saw some sourdough starter in your refrigerator.
Yeah, my father liked to bake bread. He couldn't cook anything else worth a damn, but he liked baking bread. I've been feeding it, but...
I'll bake some bread if you want.
That'd be good.
He sat.
Aren't you eating?
She nodded, but didn't get a plate, or sit.
I want to thank you.
You already did.
I haven't had a real shower in... I'll apologize if I get emotional. Some of it's hormones, but being able to wash my hair... I used your mother's shampoo and her shower gel, and she has had skin cream. It was open, and I used some. I just used it without...
You could do me a favor and not cry over that.
He looked at her as he ate with annoyed hazel eyes, eyes that blurred green and gold together.
It'll put me off this stir-fry, and it's damn good. She wouldn't care, and I sure don't. Look, I dealt with my dad's stuff like that. I couldn't seem to go through hers, so use what you want.
She has backups, unopened. You could barter them.
Use it.
This time his tone snapped a bit.
If I'd wanted to barter her damn face cream, I would have.
Understanding pain and loss, she said nothing more until she'd plated some lunch for herself and sat.
If you'd tell me if there are any off-limits rooms in the house while I'm here?
Other than the locked room in the basement full of the mutilated bodies of my victims, no.
She scooped up some stir-fry. He was right. It was damn good.
All right, I'll stay out of there. Do you have any food allergies?
I'm temperamentally allergic to spinach.
Then I won't put any in the meatloaf.
Simon gave Lana plenty of space. He expected she'd stay for a couple days, pull herself together. He didn't have a problem giving her that time and space, especially since, Jesus, the woman could cook. Plus, she carried her weight, no question, during those couple of days. Maybe he hadn't noticed the dust and dog hair, but he noticed when it was gone. Maybe he hadn't had a problem snagging clothes or towels out of a laundry basket, but it didn't hurt his feelings to find them all folded and where they belonged. The dogs liked her. He'd walked by the library late one night and had seen her sitting in the dark, grieving for her husband, with Harper's head on her knee, Lee sprawled over her feet. He figured to take her into the settlement once she'd gathered herself, turn her over to one of the women he knew. Any one of them would know more about dealing with a pregnant woman and delivering a baby than he did. As for her insistence that the baby she carried was both special and a target of dark forces, he'd reserve judgment. While he couldn't deny he'd gotten used to looking out for himself alone and the farm, he couldn't just turn her out. He'd been raised better than that. He was better than that. She wasn't much for conversation, and that was fine too, as he'd grown accustomed to the quiet. He thought of her as a kind of temporary live-in farmhand who put together three solid meals a day and dealt with the house so he didn't have to. One who didn't look to be entertained. One who wasn't hard on the eyes, especially since after a couple of days she'd lost most of the living on raw nerves edge that had haunted her eyes. In truth, he had to admit he'd missed knowing he'd come in after the early chores to a hot breakfast, and having someone who knew their way around tending crops. She wouldn't go near the cornfield, and he didn't ask why. By day four, they'd fallen into a routine, one comfortable enough it worried him. Routines led to depending on each other. Best thing all around? Nudge her into moving to the settlement, nesting there until she had her kid. He started to ease her in that direction over a dinner of fried chicken and potato salad, his request.
I'm going to take a load of produce into the settlement tomorrow.
If you're bartering, you could use more flour.
You've got a better sense by now what we're low on in the pantry. You ought to come in with me. It'd give you a sense of things.
Her gaze shifted up, deep, sad blue, met his.
I can make you a list.
You could. There are probably things you need. Personal things.
I don't need anything. If you're ready for me to move on...
I didn't say that.
Thought it, maybe, but that was different.
Look, there are women in there who've been through what you're going through. Who've, you know, had babies. Plus, people pass through. Some stay. Maybe somebody's come in who has medical experience.
Her fingers moved restlessly over the ring she wore around her neck.
I've still got time. I can do more until...
Christ, Lana.
He rarely used her name, and did so now in pure frustration.
Give me a small break. I'm saying you'd be better off with people who know what they're doing when the kid decides she wants to come out. If you're not nervous about that, you're made of fucking steel.
I'm scared to death. Terrified. Even knowing, absolutely knowing she's meant to be born, meant to live and shine and do amazing things, I'm terrified.
Studying her face, he sat back.
You don't look scared.
She kept her gaze steady, laid a hand on the baby mound.
Before I looked down, saw the farm, whenever I was tired and hungry, I couldn't let myself be scared. If it snuck through, I had to shove it away again, or I'd have stopped, just stopped and given up. I told myself I'd find a place, a safe place to bring her into the world. Then I looked down and saw the farm, the house, the fields, the animals, like a painting of before the world stopped.
Now her hand made slow circles over the baby.
Still, I didn't let myself hope. It was just the immediate. Tomatoes on the vine, bees humming, chickens clucking. I thought, food, because I needed it. I didn't let myself think shelter or rest until you spoke to me. You told me to come inside and eat, and then I began to hope. It's not fair to put my hopes on you, but I am, because she needs me to.
No, she didn't look afraid, he thought. Neither her voice nor her face held a plea. He'd never have resisted a plea. Instead, they held a quiet, steady strength. That, to him, was even more irresistible.
How about we compromise on it? I'll bring one of the women back with me. Her name's Anne. Grandmotherly type, and she'd probably kick my ass for saying that. You could meet her, see how you feel then. I know she's had kids. When the time comes, I could go get her, have her help you out.
She comes into your hands first.
Huh?
Her eyes changed, seemed to stare straight into him, now dark as midnight.
Into yours on the wind-swept night, and lightning heralds the birth of the one. Will you teach her to ride and think she was born knowing? I teach her the old ways, what I can, but she has so much more. Safe, time out of time, while the dark rages, until in the book of spells, in the well of light, she takes her sword and shield, and with the rise of magics, she takes her place. She will risk all to fulfill her destiny, this precious child of the Tuatha Dé Danann. For this she grows in me. For this she comes into your hands.
She'd gone very pale, and now reached an unsteady hand for her water glass.
What was that?
It's her.
Lana sipped slowly until the dizziness passed.
I don't know how to explain it. Sometimes I see her as clearly as I see you. She's so beautiful.
As she sipped again, Lana's eyes filled, but the tears didn't spill.
So strong and fierce and lovely. Sometimes I hear her, a voice in my head. I think I might have given up a dozen times without that voice telling me to keep going, and sometimes, like now, she speaks through me. Or lets me know enough to speak for her.
In that moment, Simon believed her. Absolutely.
What is she?
The answer. When I'm afraid for her, for what's going to be asked of her. I know what I'm asking of you, she began, and the dogs scrambled up from their evening naps.
Yeah, I hear it.
With his eyes still on hers, Simon rose.
Somebody's coming. You should go down into the root cellar until I see who it is. Take the shotgun with you,
he added as he retrieved the 9mm he'd set on top of the fridge for the meal. Walking to the front of the house, he grabbed the rifle propped by the door, stepped out on the porch to watch the unfamiliar truck spit gravel on its way down the farm lane. He ordered the dogs to sit, to hold, waiting until two men, both armed, got out of either side of the truck.
Evening,
he said easily, watching their gaits, their hands, their expressions. He recognized trouble, prepared to deal with it. One had a viciously scarred face, as if claws had raked across it, right to left, just under the right eye to the jawline under his left ear. It twisted his mouth into a curled sneer.
Nice place you got here.
The one with a scraggly, graying beard spoke first.
Yeah, I like it. A lot of stock, a lot of crops for one man to handle. Keeps me busy. Something I can do for you? We're looking for a woman.
Simon flashed a grin.
Who isn't?
The bearded one laughed, took a paper out of his front pocket, unfolded it.
This one in particular.
Simon looked at the paper, at the excellent sketch of Lana.
She's a looker. I wouldn't mind finding her myself. She's pregnant, about 7 or 8 months. We got word she might be wandering around this way. I think I'd remember seeing that face and a pregnant woman wandering around here. How'd you lose her?
Ain't none of your business, the scarred man snapped.
Just making conversation. I don't get many visitors.
The bearded one pulled his nose.
It must get lonely out here on your own. Like I said, I keep busy. Still, you're pretty out of the way, kind of cut off. Looks like you've got enough food going here to feed an army. It happens, we've got one. We'll take that trailer of yours, along with two of those cows. I'm not looking to trade, thanks all the same.
Nobody said nothing about trading.
The scarred man pulled his gun.
We're taken. Now you go on and hitch that trailer up to the truck.
You know, that's not very friendly of you.
Simon moved fast. The scarred one held his gun like some B-movie cowboy, all show, no sense. Simon slapped his forearm out, jabbed his other elbow into the bearded face, and had the scarred man's gun in his own hand in 3 smooth moves.
I'd shoot you both where you stand,
he said, his tone pleasant and skimmed with ice.
But I'm not in the mood to dig the graves. You're going to want to think before you reach for that gun.
He warned the bearded man.
Now take it out slow, 2 fingers, and set it down on the porch. Otherwise, I'll just gut shoot your friend and let you haul him away to bleed out in your truck. Didn't say he was my friend.
Simon could have handled it, intended to. Then he heard Lana's voice.
I don't mind digging graves.
Lana's voice, Simon thought, trying not to react, as the woman standing with her shotgun, pointed at the uninvited guests, looked nothing like her. A sturdy build, not a pregnant one, short dark hair instead of the long butterscotch candy blonde, wearing a sneer that suited the tough, lean face.
It's not like we haven't done it before.
Now don't shoot them unless you have to, honey.
Putting amusement into his voice, Simon yanked the gun out of the second man's holster.
We just painted the damn porch last spring. She's meaner than I am,
Simon commented.
And the men upstairs, out in the barn, the ones with guns trained on you, they're meaner than she is. That takes doing. An army, you said. Yeah, We eat pretty well here. Now, we'd have been happy enough to give you some food to take on your way, but bad manners can't be rewarded. Right, honey?
You know how I feel about it, and that one's already bleeding on the damn porch. Maybe I'll just shoot the other one in the leg.
Told you she's mean. Now, if I were you, I'd get back in the truck and head back the way you came. Otherwise, she's going to get irritated and shoot you. That'll whip up the rest of them, and they'll Bonnie and Clyde the shit out of you. I'd like my gun back. Consider the loss a consequence of poor manners. Get the fuck off my land, or I'll let her put a hole in you. Then I'll sick the dogs on you.
At the word sick, both dogs bared teeth, growled. The men backed off the porch, got into the truck. Simon saw the move and still waited until the scarred man jerked another gun up to the side window. He shot him, center of the forehead, tracked his aim toward the driver. The truck reversed fast, tossing up gravel and smoke, spun around to speed up the lane. When he stopped, Simon switched handgun for rifle, then held off when the passenger door opened and the driver shoved his dead companion out.
Hell, looks like I'll be digging after all.
He waited until the truck vanished over the rise.
You didn't say you were a shapeshifter.
I'm not.
Lana lowered the shotgun, then staggered the few steps toward the porch, dropped heavily on the step.
It's an illusion, she said as it faded. Just like a costume. I've never tried it before. It took a lot. You killed him.
His choice, not mine.
She nodded.
They were in New Hope, part of the attack. His face, the dead one, I did that to his face. I don't know how. They nearly found me a while back.
I told you to go down to the root cellar.
And do what?
The fierceness snapped back as her head jerked up.
Tremble and wait? Expect somebody to protect me and mine? I've been finished with that for a long time now. Feels like a lifetime ago. I thought if I let them see me, the illusion, they'd have more reason to believe you hadn't seen me. They'd leave you alone. Then I heard what they said about taking and knew they weren't going to leave.
She sat in silence when he released the dogs and sat beside her as the dogs bumped against them for attention.
I'll leave in the morning. I'd like to be sure he's a good distance away first.
He'd been careful not to touch her, not once since she'd walked into his world. But now he took her chin in his hand, turned her face to his.
You're not going anywhere. I offered you a place to stay because you needed it. God knows you've earned it. I believed you believed people were after you and the kid. But I'm going to admit, I thought you were mostly being paranoid. I was wrong.
He could come back, bring others back.
Shifting to scrub hands over the dogs, Simon shook his head.
That type looks for easy pickings. Now he knows we're not. You can put your hopes on me. I can handle it.
He rose.
Like I could have handled those two, he added.
I know, I saw that. What did you do in the army?
He smiled.
Followed orders.
And gave them. Captain, you said.
It's been a while. Now I'm a farmer.
Sitting back down on the step, he looked out at the fields, the crops.
But I know how to protect my land, my home. What's in it?
He'd been a warrior, she thought. He had that controlled danger under the easy. She'd seen that control in Max, seen him develop it as he'd led people, had them depend on him. Now she sat with another warrior, another leader.
People are stronger together. I know how to defend, too.
I got that impression. I've had it since I found you in the henhouse.
I didn't always. In New York, was it really only months ago? I liked to shop, to plan dinner parties. I liked to dream about opening my own restaurant one day. I'd never held a gun, much less fired one, and my power, it was barely a whisper.
It seems you've found your voice, then.
It's more being found. If you hadn't come back to help your parents, would you have stayed in the army?
No, it was time to get out.
What did you want to do?
He realized they were having the longest and certainly the easiest conversation they'd had to date, with a dead man a few yards away. Christ, he wondered why it didn't strike him as strange.
I thought about starting a business, maybe, in the town up the road that's not a town anymore.
What kind of business?
Making furniture. That was kind of a hobby of my father's, and I picked it up. A little business working with my hands, on my own time, in my own way, close to home, because I'd spent so much time away.
The light began to settle toward twilight, and he found it too easy to just sit, talk with her about old dreams as night approached.
Anyway, I've got to dig a hole.
He walked off to get a shovel. Lana stayed where she was, crossed her hands over her belly. Despite the death, the violence, the threat, she felt safe. Chapter 25. In the end, Lana had her way. She couldn't go into the settlement, nor have anyone come to her. Either might put lives at risk if the purity warriors came back. Her child had spoken to her, and through her. For now, she believed things were as they were meant to be. She cooked, gardened, gathered eggs, and took comfort in the simplicity of the quiet. As summer waned toward fall, she harvested vegetables, canned them for winter use, made jams and jellies while Simon mowed and baled hay, cut wheat for the meal, hauled corn to the silo or the kitchen. One day he brought back seeds he'd bartered for, 3 each from the fruit of dwarf orange and lemon trees. She found them as priceless as diamonds.
"Could work," he said as they potted them for the greenhouse. "Lemonade on the porch next summer.
Duck a l'orange next fall.
Maybe we'll find lime, tequila shots."
She laughed, carefully covered a seed with soil.
"You must like tequila," he commented. "That's the first time I've heard you really laugh."
"I'm planting orange seeds in dirt sweetened with chicken poop and imagining knocking back some tequila. It's pretty funny."
"My dad always said a little chicken shit'll help grow most anything."
"I guess we'll find out."
Curious, she went with instinct, held her hands over the pot. She let it flow through her, in her, of her, out of her. She felt the rise, the pulse, and the power. A tender green sprig broke through the dirt, reached toward the light. She laughed again, a sound that began on amazement, ended on joy. Beaming with it, she looked over at Simon, found him staring at her.
"That's a hell of a thing,"
he managed.
"If you'd rather I didn't."
"Do I look stupid to you?"
he demanded, eyes firing green under gold.
"The world is what it damn well is. As it is, I'm a farmer who's got a witch who can give the crops a boost. Have you got a problem with what you are?"
"No, but..."
"Why should I? The way I see it, the biggest problem we've had right from the get is people pointing fingers and worse at ones who aren't just like them. We ought to try to do better this time around. It might be our last chance to get it right."
He tapped another pot.
"Do this one."
She let it come, all joy now, then stepped back from the tender sprout.
"I don't know if it's me or her or us, but I know she changed me. If I woke tomorrow and all these months had been a dream, I'd still be changed. Oh!"
Once again, she laughed as she pressed a hand to the side of her belly. Those kinds of moves and gestures made him twitchy.
"You okay?"
"Yeah, she's kicking."
Surprising them both, Lana took his hand, pressing it to her stomach. He felt a jolt, one that went straight into him. Life kicking against his hands, and for reasons he couldn't comprehend, into his heart. Something grew inside there, he thought. Someone innocent, helpless. Yet, from the strength of the kick, fierce.
"She's got some sass."
Now he stepped back, as Lana's face was nearly as luminous as it had been when she'd brought life out of the dirt. The look of her, bold and glowing, stirred something in him just as the child stirred in her. He'd been careful, damn careful, to avoid that.
I've got work I need to get to. Can you handle the rest of this?
Yes. When he left, she stood quietly with the scent of dirt and growing things. Simon kept busy and treated Lana like he'd have treated a sister if he'd had one. Twice in September, groups passed by. She stayed in the house and out of sight, wary. He gave them supplies, directed them to the settlement. Some would stay, others he knew would continue on, searching for something else, something more, just searching. After he saw the second group off, Simon came into the kitchen to find her stirring stew on the stove with the shotgun propped beside her. He moved it to the back door.
8 people. One of them had wings. I can't get used to seeing that. They skirted around D.C. a few days ago.
Since the table was set, she tended to fuss with that sort of thing, he washed up in the sink.
They heard gunfire, saw smoke. One of them was getting the hell out when he hooked up with them. He said, word is... God, what's her name?
He paused, rubbed his temple.
McBride's still alive, and what's left of the government's trying to hold the city. Every time they get communications up, somebody takes it out again.
It seems like another world, like a story about another world.
Yeah, it does. But it isn't. There are rumors about people in camps and labs.
Magical people?
Yeah, but not just. The estimate is...
He considered saying nothing to her, had nearly convinced himself to take that tack, but he couldn't.
I'm telling you because it's not right, you don't know, but it's not confirmed, okay?
She turned to him.
Okay.
They're saying the plague's finished, run its course. That's the good news. The bad is they're estimating it took about 80% of the population. That's world population. That's more than 5 billion people. It could be more. I need a drink.
He went to the pantry, got a bottle of whiskey, poured 2 fingers.
I heard the same a few days ago.
He downed half the whiskey.
There's a guy with a ham radio in the settlement, and he's been able to reach a few others, even a couple in Europe, and it's no better there. Adding the ones who offed themselves, the ones killed for the fucking hell of it, you can up the percentage. New York, do you want to hear this?
Yes, but more, I need to hear it.
New York's under the control of the dark uncannies. There's talk of human sacrifice, of stake-burning people like you, who aren't like them. The military's holding some areas, especially west of the Mississippi, but from what I get, the chain of command's pretty fractured. There are offshoots, and they're posting bounties on all uncannies. Dark, light, doesn't matter.
The Purity Warriors.
They're leading the charge. Raiders are keeping mobile, doing hit-and-runs, and they're bounty hunting.
Calmly, she ladled stew into one of his mother's fancy dishes. She did like to fuss.
So it's bad for everyone, but for someone like me, we're hunted by all sides. It's hard to believe what you said the other day about getting it right this time could happen.
She carried the bowl to the table.
I have to believe it.
Now she ladled stew from the dish to the bowls. She sat, waited for him to join her.
When I was in New Hope, I saw what people could and would do together. I saw how others tried to destroy that. You were a soldier.
Yeah.
So was Max at the end. He made the choice to fight, to lead because it needed to be done. You did the same, killing to protect someone you barely knew. You gave the people who were here food you worked to grow, and that was a choice. The people who tried to destroy won't win because there will always be people like Max, like you. Like the people I left behind who make the choice.
She held a brighter view than he did at the moment. He didn't mind the balance.
I read one of his books, not the one you have,
he said when she stared at him.
One of the others. It was good. He was a good writer.
He was.
She smiled over the ache in her heart.
He was good.
Habitually, after a long day, after the evening meal and the evening chores, Simon worked in the barn. He usually wound down before bed in his mother's library for an hour or two with a book. He missed TV and wasn't ashamed to admit it, but books made up for it. He missed beer and had high hopes the group trying to put together a little brewery would succeed. He settled most nights for tea and had, almost, acquired a taste for it. That didn't make up for the lack of beer. The dogs generally settled down with him, making it a nice, easy way to end the day. He'd let them out for a last round before heading up. The book took his mind off the work, the world, the woman sleeping upstairs. The work would always be there. He couldn't do a damn thing about the world, and he limited his thoughts regarding Lana to a very narrow window. The last few nights, he studied. Books were good for that as much as entertainment. He'd done plenty of scavenging in the months since his parents died. Running a farm the way things turned out was a different prospect than growing up on one the way things had been. He'd added considerably to the library. Books gave him instructions on beekeeping, on butchering, though he'd happily turned that task over to the settlement, on making butter, cheese, holistic medicines and treatments. Cooking, before Lana had come along. So he did what he thought of as his homework with a mixture of fascination and horror, laced with a good dose of dread. When he heard her coming, it surprised him enough to have him slap the book shut and rise. She never stirred out of her room once she'd gone in, shut the door. But she stepped in now, her hair tumbled over her shoulders, the big, baggy t-shirt flowing over Baby Mountain and barely reaching the middle of her thighs. She had damn nice legs, he thought, then immediately shut that part of his brain down.
Sorry, couldn't sleep.
No problem. Do you need something?
I thought maybe a book.
She trailed off as she caught sight of the one he held.
Home birthing guide?
She'd distracted him, he realized. Her legs had distracted him, and he'd left the cover facing out.
They've got a lot of books at the settlement you can borrow. I stole this one because I couldn't figure out how to explain borrowing it. I figured I should know what the hell to do when the time comes.
Good idea, because that'll make one of us.
She pressed a hand to the aching small of her back.
I talked to Rachel some, the doctor in New Hope, and we were planning to start birthing lessons in September. That was the plan. Anyway, I thought maybe a book and I'd make some tea.
I'll make it. No, you look a little ragged.
I'd be insulted, except I feel the same. Should I read that?
Not if you want to sleep tonight.
He added a smile that made her laugh, and press a hand to her side.
Whoa.
Must be hard to sleep with her kicking you from the inside.
I don't know. I don't think... Rachel said Braxton Hicks contractions are like a preview of coming attractions.
Her voice hitched through the words as she braced on the back of the sofa.
You're hurting?
It's just... it's not that bad. Enough to keep me up.
She let out a breath, straightened.
Maybe it's... the thing.
The thing? Labor? Oh no, it's just those fake contractions. I'd know. I mean, I'd have to know. I think some chamomile tea and a book. Maybe just the tea, actually.
Okay.
He tossed down the book, went to the kitchen with her.
I can bring it up.
Thanks, but being up feels pretty good. I'm just restless. Looks like the dogs are, too. Should I let them out?
Yeah, go ahead.
He put on the kettle as she opened the door. Wind moaned in.
It's really blowing,
she murmured, standing for a moment and letting the cool air blast over her.
Might be a storm coming in.
He turned away from the vision of her hair flying, the shirt dancing high on her thighs, appalled by the attraction. Pregnant woman, he reminded himself, a woman who trusted and depended on him, a woman grieving for the man she'd loved.
Dark nights full of wonder when magic's poised to rise. Max wrote that, or something close to that. It's what tonight feels like.
On a quick sound of shock, she wrapped an arm around her belly, and her water broke. They stood, her at the door, the wind blowing, him at the stove, the kettle steaming, and stared at each other in complete shock.
Oh my God, my water broke. Did you hear it? Did you? It went ping. Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't think these are fake ones.
Okay, okay. Wait.
He turned the kettle down. He'd need the boiling water to sterilize. Don't think about it yet.
I don't think waiting's an option.
I don't mean wait. I mean... Okay.
Military training kicked in. He simply put himself in combat mode.
Let's get you upstairs.
My water broke all over the floor.
I'll mop it up later. I've got what we need upstairs.
What we need?
He solved the let's get you upstairs issue by picking her up. A hefty load, but he could handle it.
I read the book, right? Clean shower curtain, towels, blankets, stuff. I've got this.
I need to have this.
I've got a stopwatch. We need to time the contractions. So you've had a couple, about what, 5 minutes apart?
I don't know how many. I thought they were the other kind. Why are there another kind? Whose idea was that?
One of them, at least one of them, had to keep calm.
Give me a ballpark on how long.
A couple of hours, I guess. I'm an idiot.
A novice is different than an idiot.
He carried her into his parents' room, stood her beside the old four-poster.
I'm going to get the stuff. Can you hang on here?
Yes, I feel okay.
Since he didn't know how long that would last, he made it fast. He had the stackable containers, came back with them, spread out the shower curtain, piled up the towels.
'Cause it gets messy. I can get you another shirt. That one's wet.
She looked down at herself, up at him, closed her eyes for just a moment.
I guess it's past time to worry about being embarrassed.
She pulled it off, stood in the dim glow of gaslight, looking to his eyes like some sort of fertility goddess, ripe, beautiful, unearthly. What she was, he reminded himself, was a woman in labor, and he was the designated medic.
I'm going to help you into bed. Then I've got to get the rest of the stuff.
He eased her onto the bed, spread a blanket over her, switched on the little gas fireplace his mother had loved.
Be right back. Breathe through it, right? In through the nose, out through the mouth. Wait, here.
He pushed a stopwatch into her hand.
Time the next one. How long it lasts, then start timing how long between.
He moved fast, sterilized scissors, lengths of sturdy string, a cup of ice, a bowl of warm water, and cloths. He scrubbed his hands, under his nails, wished he'd thought to scavenge some doctor's gloves from somewhere. He organized everything while she breathed through a contraction.
They're harder, really harder. That was like a minute after 4 minutes between.
Got it. So the book says, when you're getting close, I can see the kid's head pushing against... down there. I should, look. The next contraction.
Propped up against pillows, she stared straight into his eyes.
When's your birthday?
My birthday?
I need to know something more personal about you.
Weird, but June 2nd.
Your middle name?
He smiled a little.
James.
The first time you had sex?
Come on.
I'm serious. You're about to study my vagina.
She arched her eyebrows when he winced.
If you're going to study it, you should be able to handle the name for it. And compared to that, I asked a casual question.
I was 16. Before you ask, her name was Jessica Hobbs, and we fumbled through it one night in my third-hand pickup on the side of the lane. Second time was better for both of us.
All right.
She looked toward the window.
Did you let the dogs back in? It's really blowing out there.
Yeah, they're in. Sleeping in my room. Do you want...
She pushed up on a gasp.
Here it comes!
He lifted the blanket, gently shifted her legs so the flats of her feet sat on the bed.
Don't think, don't react, he ordered himself.
He'd seen cows calve, mares foal. He'd... Holy God!
I don't see her yet, so we've got some time.
He dampened a cloth, wiped at her sweaty face, and wondered why the female of any species agreed to the process of perpetuating it. 3 insane hours later, he knew damn well there had to be a better system. Technology, medical science should have found a way. As the contractions came harder, closer, he wiped at her sweat with his good hand. She'd pretty much crushed the bones in the other, gripping it each time the pain peaked. He fed her ice chips like the book suggested, ran down for more between bouts. Every few contractions, he checked for the money shot and wondered if he'd ever be able to have sex with a woman again. He breathed with her as the wind screamed outside, as her pain-glazed eyes stared into his, as he sacrificed the future use of his right hand. Jesus, the woman had a grip. Toward hour four, she collapsed back against the mound of pillows, the ring she wore on a chain glinting between her breasts.
Why won't she come out?
The book says the first one especially can take a while.
At a loss, he brushed the sweat-dampened hair back from her face.
I remember my mom saying I took about 12 hours.
He hadn't appreciated his mother enough, not nearly enough.
12? 12?
He understood he'd taken the wrong tack when she reared up, teeth bared, gripped the front of his shirt, hauling him closer, and snarled,
Do something!
You need to stay calm. We're going to get through this.
We? We? Get me some pliers. Get me some damn pliers so I can yank a couple of your teeth out without Novocaine. Then you can say we. Don't tell me to stay calm, you fucking lunatic. Oh, God. Oh, God, here it comes.
Breathe. Breathe. Come on, babe. I'm going to check. Keep breathing. Holy shit! I see her head! I see her head! She's got hair!
For some reason, that delighted him, and he grinned as he looked up while Lana blew out breaths.
Then pull her out! Just pull her out!
Then she collapsed again on a long moan, her eyes shut.
You really saw her head?
Yeah. Hair looks dark. It's wet, but it looks dark.
Shifting, he dumped some of the ice in a cloth to cool it, stroked it over her face.
Okay, listen up. You're doing great. I know it hurts. I don't know why the hell it has to hurt so much. It's a crap system, but we're getting closer to the payoff. You can do this.
I can do this. Sorry about the fucking lunatic.
It's okay. I feel like one.
Well, you're not. And in case I call you one again, or worse, I'm telling you now, you're a hero. You are,
she said when he shook his head.
I know heroes. Oh, fuck!
He'd been in combat. He'd led men, lost men, killed men. Nothing had prepared him for the rigors of helping a laboring woman as she fought to push a child into the world. He knelt on the bed, bracing her feet against his hand, pressing his weight against them as she bore down, time after time. That fierceness pulsed from her now, sharpening her eyes, glowing on her face, and her cries were those of war, not of pain. When sweat soaked through his shirt, he stripped it off, tossed it aside. Like Lana, he wore a chain, and he carried a medal bearing the image of Michael the Archangel.
Breathe it out. Breathe it out.
He swiped his forearm over his brow as she lay back and gathered herself.
We're really close.
Lana curled up, gulped in air, pushed while the first rumbles of thunder joined the howling wind.
There's her head. Jesus, Lana, look, there's her head. No, pant, don't push. Wait, pant, don't push. Okay, yeah.
Carefully, he lifted the cord from around the baby's neck.
Let's get the rest of her out of here. Ready?
Tears mixed with sweat as she rode the birth pangs, watched Simon guide one shoulder, then the other. The room, the night sky, burst with light. On the mantel over the little gas fire, the candles flashed to flame. On a mother's fierce call, the baby slid into Simon's hands, and with her first breath, loosed a cry like triumph.
I've got her.
Stunned, awed, overwhelmed, Simon stared down at the wriggling infant.
I've got her. Wow.
She's beautiful. Oh, isn't she beautiful?
As Lana reached out, Simon gave her the child.
Damn right she is. You gotta hold her head lower, the book said. Drains the fluids. I'm gonna clean her up some, okay? And we need to keep her warm.
Laughing, weeping, Lana pressed her lips to the infant's cheek.
It's my baby. She's here. She's beautiful.
Lightning flashed again as she looked at Simon.
Out of me, into your hands, and into mine. She's yours, too.
Because he couldn't speak, he nodded. Dealing with the practicalities steadied him. Birth was a messy business, and by the time he'd cleaned up, the sun shimmered pink through the windows, and the baby nursed at her mother's breast. That was a picture he would carry in his head for the rest of his life.
How about I scramble up some eggs, get you that tea we never got around to?
I could eat.
She stroked a finger over the baby's hair, Max's dark hair.
I don't have the words, Simon. I just don't have them.
What are you going to call her?
Fallon. She's Fallon. Born in the year one. Conceived and saved by one man, delivered into the hands of another. I know she'll honor them both. I know it.
He brought her food, made sure she was comfortable before going out to deal with the stock. The fields would wait. He checked on them, found them sleeping, and took the time to grab a shower, where he braced his hands against the tile while the water beat on him and tried to sort out his feelings. Too many to sort. He went to the barn, brought back the project he'd worked on in the evenings for weeks. The cradle stood waist-high, built with pine he'd stained a deep, rich brown. It rocked gently at the push of his hand. The baby opened her eyes. The dark, somehow magical infant blue seemed to see straight into him.
Man,
he murmured, using a fingertip to stroke her cheek.
You look like you know everything there is and more. I'm going to catch a couple hours of sack time myself. So,
what if they needed him? With a shrug, he stretched out on the bed beside Lana. If they needed him, he thought as he drifted off, he'd be right there. The baby whimpered, had him blinking his eyes open again.
Don't wake her up, okay?
He whispered, gave the tiny rump a couple of awkward pats.
In her place, I'd sleep a month.
When she whimpered again, stirred restlessly, he shifted.
Okay, let's try this.
He gathered her up, and when she curled against his chest, rubbed her back.
Yeah, that's better. That's better. That's my girl.
As he slept, Fallon watched him. Knew him. Epilogue. On the last day of the first year, Lana stood at the window watching a light, pretty fall of snow. She cuddled Fallon as she wondered what the new year would bring. A year before, she'd been with Max at a party in Soho, drinking wine, laughing, dancing while thousands gathered in Times Square to watch the ball drop. She thought of Max often. She had only to look at Fallon, the already thick, raven-dark hair, the eyes slowly turning from infant blue to smoky gray. The pang had lessened, and the baby was part of the healing. So, she knew, was Simon. Just as she knew his feelings for her, as she knew his unquestionable love for the baby. She'd end this year, this first year, with memories of the man she'd loved, memories she'd always hold precious, and she'd begin the next, giving her heart to the man she'd come to love.
You're the link between us, my baby.
She brushed her lips over Fallon's hair. She lifted the baby high, making her gurgle and kick her legs.
You're the everything.
She heard the dogs bark, and lowering the baby, saw a man on horseback riding down the lane toward the house. Fear came first. Would it always? She ran to get the sling she'd made, secured Fallon in it to free her hands before she retrieved the shotgun. Ready to protect, defend, she watched as Simon walked toward the horseman. The man dismounted. He wore a long, dark coat, held the bay's reins in one gloved hand. He wore no hat, and snow fell over his wavy mane of hair. His beard, trim and dark like his hair, carried a white streak. They spoke. Simon glanced toward the house, then left the man standing in the snow with his horse.
Who is he?
Lana demanded when Simon opened the front door.
What does he want?
He says his name is Malik. He says he's come to pay tribute to the one and her mother and won't come in without your invitation.
He claims he has things to tell you. He's not armed.
He knows about the baby?
He knew the night she was born, Lana. He knew the hour. He knows her name. He says he's sworn to her. I believe him.
Simon took the shotgun from her.
But I'll tell him to go if you don't want to talk to him.
He has power, she said. I feel it. He's letting me feel it, so I understand he won't use it to harm. I wish I didn't have to talk to him. I wish she was only a baby, my baby. But...
Lana stepped to the door, looked out.
Please, come in.
Thank you. Is there a place where my horse can rest out of the weather? We've traveled a long way. I'll take care of it.
Simon brushed a hand over Fallon's hair, ran it down to give Lana's arm a reassuring squeeze.
Nobody's going to hurt her.
Bring him into the kitchen. I'll make him something to eat.
She heated soup, made tea, warmed bread, and steeled herself when Simon brought Malik in.
Blessings on you,
Malik said,
and on the light you've brought into the world.
There's food.
And kindness. May I sit?
She nodded, but kept one arm protectively around the baby in the sling.
How do you know about my daughter?
Her coming has been written, sung, foretold. 1 year ago today, the fabric ripped, the scales tipped when the blood of the damned defiled holy ground. So the purge followed, and magic strikes back. You have nothing to fear from me.
Then why am I so afraid?
You're a mother. What mother doesn't fear for her child, especially one who has hints of the child's destiny? May I eat? I've fasted 3 days in honor of the One.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Here.
Simon lifted Fallon out of the sling. She immediately babbled at him, tugging at his hair. Then she looked solemnly at Malik.
She still remembers some of the waiting time, and sees some of what's to come. Knows these times as much as the here and now. You see that too,
he said to Lana. Heavy with the weight of destiny, Lana sat.
Is there no choice for her?
Oh, she'll have many choices, as do we all. If Max had chosen to go north instead of south, if you had chosen to stay rather than to think first of the child and your friends, if Simon had chosen to turn you away, we would all be somewhere else now. Instead, we're here, and I break my fast with this excellent soup.
He studied Fallon as he ate.
She'll be a great beauty. That is not a choice, of course. She takes much from you, from her birth father. You'll teach her what you know, as her life father will teach her. As will I, when the time comes.
You?
It's my task, and my choice. Let me comfort you first. For 13 years, she will be safe. They will hunt, they will scourge the land, but they won't find her. When you see me again, you must entrust her to me for 2 years.
I won't.
It will be your choice, and hers. 2 years to teach her what I know, to train her to become what she was born to be. In those years, the world will burn and bleed. Some will build, some will destroy. How much easier it is to tear apart than to mend. How many years beyond those before she's ready, before she takes up sword and shield, I can't see. But without her and those she leads, the suffering is endless. And if we say no?
Simon demanded.
That's the end of it? You have 13 years to weigh the choice, to prepare to make it, as does she. I have gifts for her.
He turned his hand over and held a pure white candle.
Only she can light it, and it will guide her through the dark.
He set it down, once again opened his hand, held a ball of crystal.
Only she can see what it holds, and it will show her the way.
He set it beside the candle.
And?
He held a candy pink teddy bear.
Because not all should be duty. I hope it brings her comfort and joy. Know she'll have my sword, my fist, my power, always.
I'm honored to be the tutor, the trainer, the protector of Fallon Swift. Thank you for the food.
He vanished. Simon took a full step back with the baby.
Who does that? Can you do that?
I've never tried.
Maybe don't. And despite the vanishing act, nobody's going to take her if we say screw you. Nobody's going to make us turn her over to some wizard for a couple years in some magical boot camp.
I knew when I was carrying her, Lana murmured. She knew. 13 years. She'll be safe.
I'll keep her safe every day of my life.
I know it. I know.
She rose, turned to him.
The day she was born, I woke up and you were sleeping beside me, exhausted, and you were holding her. And I knew. You'd made her a cradle with your own hands, thinking of her even before she was born. And I knew.
He called her Fallon Swift. Will you give her your name?
Sure. I'd give her anything, but...
I loved Max, and she will too. I will tell her everything I can about him.
Of course you will.
What led me here, Simon? Was it her?
She stepped closer, smiling when Fallon gripped her finger, tried gnawing on it.
Was it me? Was it Max pushing me towards someone who'd love and protect, who he could trust and respect? Maybe it was all of that. Maybe it was something in you pulling us here.
You're her father, too. You're the father who walks her at night, who'll help teach her to walk and talk, who'll worry about her, be proud of her. She's so lucky to have two good men as fathers. She has Max's name. I'd like her to have yours.
She's got it.
Emotion all but drowned him.
I'm proud to give it to her.
Fallon Swift.
Lana lifted the chain, Max's ring, from around her neck.
This I'll save for her now.
She laid it beside the gifts on the table.
And this.
She drew her wedding ring off her left hand, slipped it onto her right.
I'll wear to honor the man I loved. Can you accept that?
I don't know what you're getting at.
He wouldn't reach for her, she thought, wouldn't cross that line, because he understood honor, because he lived honorably. So she reached, she crossed, she touched a hand to his cheek as she rose up, leaned in, laid her lips on his.
I'm lucky to have loved and been loved by a good man. Lucky to love and be loved by another. Do you love me?
Fallon snuggled her head on his shoulder, and Simon was lost.
I think since I caught you with an egg in your hand, I can wait,
he began, but she kissed him again. This time, he pulled her in, the baby between them, and let himself feast.
The year's ending, she told him. The terrible, miraculous, bitter, and joyful year. I want to start the next one with you. I want to look toward all the next ones with you. I want to be your family.
She felt the joy of it when he held her, the blessed heat of it when their lips met again. Life to be lived. The child bounced between them, cooing, joyful. And waving her hand out, set the candle to flame. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Year One by Nora Roberts, performed by Julia Whalen. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.